As we close in on the start of an unprecedented school year, two education experts from Oregon State University join me for a deep dive into distance learning.
I'm Chelsea Williams. I'm the manager for the Professional Development for Educators at Oregon State University.
So I am Justin Roach, and I am the clinically based elementary Masters of Arts and Teaching program lead at Oregon State University.
We'll talk about how far we've all come since last spring, what's working, and what needed improvement over the summer, and if this fall will provide us a glimpse into how education will work in the future. It is Tuesday, August 18th. I'm Ian Costello, and you are listening to the COIN Podcast Network coverage of the coronavirus pandemic.
Welcome to the COIN Podcast Network.
How much, just for the sake of conversation, how much has your job changed since mid-March?
This is crisis learning right now. This is crisis teaching. And it's not something that we hope in the long run is our new reality.
Before I became in this position, I lived the experience of what it's like to teach in these different modalities. Before now, it's been there, we've known about it, but primarily it's been people who have wanted to embrace this type of learning that have sought out these experiences. And the pandemic has created a situation where there's no choice in the matter. Suddenly it became much more important for people to get this information and this learning than ever before.
I've heard from a lot of teachers that they feel much more prepared for this distance learning system headed into this fall than they were when in-classroom teaching kind of shut off like a light switch back in March. From the people you're talking to, can you give me a sense of how fast our current atmosphere of distance learning is evolving?
I think quickly. It definitely is evolving because of the pressures of COVID. It forced us to have to take a look at this type of learning.
It's evolving fast. Many districts had an online education component. So districts are looking at how they can perhaps convert that or expand that to allow for more students to take advantage of that. I think we're going to see the learning curve for teachers just go through the roof over these last couple weeks in August and the first couple weeks in September.
I think that there's been quite a bit of a movement because I'm a person who's been involved in online learning since 2006. So I know that it's been happening, but I think other teachers have been in a place where they've had the luxury of not having deciding whether they wanted to choose in or choose out. So now I think it is pressuring us to take a look at it. It's in the spotlight in a way that it's never been before.
We talked about the evolution, rapid evolution. Can you give a sense of how much that is being forced by the coronavirus pandemic?
Schools and universities, education in general, has done a really good job of trying to integrate technology and finding ways of utilizing it to expand the learning opportunities. So this has been going on for a long time. You know, the idea of delivering all instruction online is certainly something new. It's something that we're being forced to do. I want to make it really clear, there's no substitute for in-person the relationship building that kids get between the adults in the building, between the other students that they have there, there's absolutely no substitute for that. And teachers want to be in the classroom with the kids. That has to be said over and over and over again. Even though there are teachers that, and I'm one of them, have been pushing for, you know, to really make sure that schools are being careful before they open. The safety of kids is first and foremost to us. But you know, we're adapting and teachers are adapting because we have to. It's not the same. I want to be teaching in front of my graduate students. It stinks, you know?
Do you have any belief that people would have come around eventually to doing more of this? Or is this a situational-based need that's driving growth right now?
There's a difference between higher ed and K through 12. So in higher education, this has been evolving and has continued to evolve because people's lifestyles have shifted and not everybody can go on a college campus. So this, in terms of higher education, hasn't changed all that much. And I think that the belief system in K through 12, face-to-face instruction is the best instruction. I'm not here to dispute that. I'm a communication teacher, so I'm all about being in class with others. You know, it's very tough to do a speech online. It can be done though. And that's kind of the, you know, for K through 12 teachers, I think for them that it's a different experience than it is for higher ed. And it is much, the pandemic's really pushing them. And it's also pushing their learning curve for instructors who didn't really need to do that because they show up in their fifth grade classroom and they do what they always have done. So for them, it's a totally different story.
Based on what you know about how fast these things are changing, how much of a difference do you think students and parents are going to see when things get going again this fall as compared to where we were in mid-March?
Well, there's going to be a structure to it, I would imagine, that is going to be very different. There's going to be higher expectations and more accountability on the part of the students and their parents. There's going to be more accountability on the part of the teachers. And I think that structure will be really helpful.
Well, it'll be better. I think the opportunities have been there for K through 12 teachers to get themselves, to get their bearings at least. I think you'll see a marked difference in online instruction because these teachers have been, you know, so proactive. Most K through 12 teachers, you know, this isn't their, from those that I speak with, it isn't their preference, but they do realize that the learning must go on. They're dedicated to their students and they're going to figure it out.
So we know that school looked different in March than it did in January, and we know it's going to look different this fall than it did in March. From your standpoint, Justin, do you think what we're seeing with this necessary focus on distance learning and the public interest in it, do you think that could lead to a fundamental shift in the way we educate kids?
I hope so. I hope, first off, that our society is recognizing the integral role that educators play in our society and that we recognize them for that. That's huge, right? I think the role of parents as partners in education is going to change. And I hope in a really positive way. Our society has sort of had this debate. We need to rush back to have school because parents have to work. And to me, that's the wrong focus. You know, that's huge. Our economy, you know, absolutely needs our parents to be able to do their jobs and to keep the economy moving. But our students need to be in school because of a variety of things, of building relationships, of learning those social emotional skills to be successful, of learning those concepts to be able to move throughout their education and get a job someday and be successful. And so the role of parents to be a part of that is, I think we're already seeing that. Parents are learning the huge role that our educators are playing, and they're having to be a much more involved piece of that. And I'm excited to see where that goes.
We now know that this is possible. Something like this can happen where we have to completely social distance. And we now know we can't control it. So I think that what it's going to fundamentally change is that instructors now realize that this is a modality that they need to adapt to. And I think what it will do is change how we allocate resources, for example, in school. I think you'll see a lot more schools adopting and keeping hybrid models of education where students come in for 2 days and then they do online for 2 days. So I think you will see schools starting to adopt this. It's not like now we're not doing this and now we're going to go back to doing it the way we did it before. It has fundamentally shifted education. But I also think that in spite of all of the challenges, it could bode well for schools as they start to look at things like costs. You know, it's very expensive to have large buildings and heat large buildings and pay for staff to be there, you know, all of these things. So as long as we shift this, in educational institutions start to take a look at how they allocate resources, I think it could potentially be a positive thing.
Do you see any downside?
Well, yeah, there are some downsides. I think that the downsides are that, you know, we are people who need people. You know, we are creatures where being in connection with others is great. And I also think that missing out on that, but it's also some downsides in terms of like accessibility. We have to make sure that schools, that there aren't students who are left behind because, you know, not everybody has an internet connection. Not everybody has a computer. Not everybody has a home situation that's able for them to be able to attend classes from home. Teachers have to learn to be more adaptive, you know, and I think in a lot of ways in terms of their grading structure and what they can expect from students who are working from home. There's some considerations, yeah. There's some considerations in terms of that could potentially be downsides if we do not plan for them.
When it comes to teachers, students, and parents, which of these groups do you think will be most affected by an increased amount of distance learning?
I think it's absolutely the students. I think the opportunities that they're missing out on by not being in the school, by not being able to, you know, be with their peers and with their teachers. So to me, I think that there's going to be long-term implications. I think, you know, when you look at the research in terms of resilience and what resilience can do for kids as they grow, I think we're going to see this COVID generation really do some incredible things in the future because they're facing these obstacles that we never had to face. And so I think there is certainly a bright side to look at. But clearly for me, it's the students that will be most affected by this.
I think they all are. I can't say that one's going to be more than the other. You know, parents are also like, you know, if you have a child that's home, you don't have childcare anymore, they're not going to school. Another downside, another challenge for teachers, it's the learning curve. And it's, you know, trying to figure out how to be more interactive. Like how do I reach a student in this modality? And for students, you know, they're learning things, you know, how are they going to be more accountable for themselves? And, you know, so there's each one of them have individual concerns, and I think equally are going to be impacted by the change.
We'll be right back.
The COIN Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Executive producer Ian Costello here, coming to you from the Work From Home COIN Podcast Studios. When we started our podcasts back in February of 2019, we had no idea that we would end up here. Now, a year and a half later, tens of thousands of you are listening to hundreds of our podcasts, and we need to make some changes to grow even further. That's why, starting this week, you can find all of the COIN podcasts in one place. The brand new COIN Podcast Network. From Beaver Smack to Writer's Block. From your weather to our constant coverage of the coronavirus pandemic and the protests in Portland. It is all available in one place. So, to keep hearing the podcasts you already love and to discover more of our exclusive audio content, head to coin.com/podcasts or search COIN, that's KOIN, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or Podbean. Thank you for listening. Do you have any concern for veteran teachers as we move toward doing more of this distance learning, this more online, about relying on and using tech that they may not fully grasp or be comfortable with?
It is a learning challenge. It's definitely been a challenge. We didn't grow up that way. We didn't think about learning like that. And so it's a struggle. It's definitely a struggle. And for those that want to hang in there, I believe can get the information, but it is definitely a little bit harder to wrap your head around it because it is just not something you're familiar with.
I think, you know, you've seen a wave of retirements over the last 10 years, and the number of those folks struggled with technology. I certainly had some coworkers as a teacher who struggled with technology. Districts have done a really good job, and teachers have been really creative of finding these platforms that, like, oh, wow, I can communicate with parents, have a note sent out to parents about what they're doing, and I don't have to pick up the phone to do it, or I don't have to, you know, send a note home with the kids that day. And the teachers are so good about sharing that with their colleagues and making sure that those opportunities are shared. And every school I work in, they're using these awesome platforms that I wish I had even just, you know, 5 years ago when I was teaching. So there's really cool opportunities there. There's people absolutely that are going to be resistant to this. And again, it's crisis learning and it's crisis teaching. So we don't have a choice. And teachers don't have a choice about having to do it. So you got to get on the bus and go with it. And I think the changes in education policy and some of the accountability measures and some of the testing and all those things, a lot of it has been really tough. A lot of it's been really good in terms of getting districts and teachers to all be on the same page and have the same expectations for each other because we know what's best for kids. That work over the last, I would really say, 10 years or so has been really helpful in terms of getting teachers and teams working together using the best resources they can to help kids learn.
We heard a lot in March about underserved neighborhoods and the schools in those neighborhoods. Justin, what do you think needs to be done to assure that there is equitable access to distance learning for all of those students who need it?
That word equity, you see it peppered throughout the ODE guidelines. When you look at every district's plan, equity is one of the first terms that you see. I think it's in front of us more than it's ever been. And districts, I have just been really kind of proud of our districts for the work they're doing in terms of creating more local hotspots, making sure that they have enough tools, whether they're Chromebooks or iPads or things like that, and getting them out to families. So districts, I believe, are really doing a great job.
I think that schools are going to need to provide a way for each student to have an internet connection, a hotspot, if you will, or how in many schools did that. I taught for Lynn Benton Community. I still teach for Lynn Benton Community College. And that is something that we did for our students, provided them laptops that they checked out. If they didn't have an internet connection, we made sure that they did have one. So that's what I meant when I said those kinds of resources must be available in order for there to be complete access for students. Meeting those needs for equity and inclusion, like that needs to be first and foremost, because we can't just assume every home has the same. So we have to make sure that the resources, not only the physical resources, but other types of resources and help are still available.
Is there some part of you that believes that some of that responsibility lies with the state?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because our public schools are receiving federal funding and we're seeing significant budget reductions. And it does come down to the state. The state has to see this as a priority if they want education to continue and continue to improve despite this pandemic.
As we look into the future, to the 5, to the 10, to the 15 years down the road, what role do you see distance learning playing in the daily education of kids?
You know, I spend a lot of time in forums inside higher ed and listening to my colleagues. I think really one of the biggest changes you're seeing is taking a look about how learning really happens for students. We're really starting to focus in on interactive learning experiences. What does it mean to have an interactive learning experience? You know, and I think that there's some good things coming about. There's different types of modalities around gamification, like different types of VR, even virtual reality is a conversation about, you know, can we project ourselves in and out of a room? You know, there's some really cool things. And I think what we'll see is more and more investing in those types of things. And also, you know, how well do we balance that with face-to-face instruction?
Just in the last 5 years since I was teaching at my own classroom, the number of platforms to be able to engage with both students and parents has dramatically increased. And so we're going to continue to see that growth, and that stuff is going to be fantastic. Perhaps now that we have more families who are accessing technology, that we're going to see those opportunities for flipping the classroom, for some more learning happening in the home place, and then being able to go back to the classroom and really have that time for practice and questioning and working with the teacher one-on-one. So I think there's some really cool opportunities there. But our teachers were doing a great job. Every single teacher I know wants to be back in their classroom with their students. And it is breaking their heart to know that they won't start after Labor Day with their activities to get to know their classroom and build that classroom community. They'll do it. They'll do it differently. But I know they're hoping that this isn't the new reality, that this is a temporary fix for a real crisis situation.
Special thanks to Justin Roach and Chelsea Williams for all of their insight. That does it for Tuesday, August 18th. Thank you for listening to the COIN Podcast Network. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the COIN Podcast Network. You can listen to more great COIN podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.